Next case for argument is Nelson versus United Parcel Service. Mr. Donner.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you. Your Honor, it's Ted Donner on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Ross Nelson. Your Honors, I should advise the court, I was court-appointed in a related case, the 06C1898 case, which was Nelson versus Teamsters. That case is still pending before Judge Pallmeyer. I was brought into this case quasi through her for court appointment to represent him in the UPS case. I did not handle the case below in this matter. Your Honors, the reason for this appeal is that we believe the summary judgment that was granted in favor of UPS and against Mr. Nelson is one that should be reversed and that the court should set this case for trial on both cases. The basic concern we have is that the direct evidence of discrimination that Mr. Nelson presented, that is the evidence that he was told and heard, rather, right after he was moved from his full-time position to his part-time position, that the goal of what was going on right then is we're going to fire that nigger. And that, we believe, Your Honor, constitutes direct evidence of discrimination. It is not, as counsel for UPS argues, evidence that would constitute some kind of a stray remark. It wasn't something that somebody said off the cuff on the street a day later.
Had the decision already been made that he was going to be fired?
The decision had been made, Your Honor, to make the adverse employment decision within maybe a half an hour before that. And it's technically true that this statement came after the decision chronologically, but that chronology is a very, very short span of time. I don't know that it's a half an hour, 20 minutes. You know, he's standing in the hallway. They're talking about it, and they're saying this in the course of what's happening. He's still physically on the premises at the moment that he's been terminated. And Your Honor, that's why.
What was Krause's role in his termination?
Krause, Your Honor, was at that moment his supervisor. She was the person who told him he's being let go. She went on to a phone call with another man who said, well, if he refuses to go to his part-time position, then fire him altogether. And it is that person who said, fire him altogether, kick him out of the building forever and a day. But it was Krause who said to him, you're being moved back.
But if her superior, if she accurately represented to her superior Nelson's refusal to work, and the superior says, fire him, then I don't know, what is the relevance of her racial animus?
Her racial animus, Your Honor, goes to the adverse employment decision of moving him from a full-time to a part-time
decision. You're not following me. Suppose his superior, her superior, Krause's superior, says to her, you know, she tells him he's refused this job assignment. Nelson's refused the job assignment. So her superior says, then fire him. And so he's fired. Now, in that account of what happened, her racial animus doesn't play any causal role, right?
What you're saying, Your Honor, is that her superior terminated him for his insubordination?
Yes.
And that insubordination would be a grounds for firing? If that was what they had presented, I think we would have had a slightly different argument to deal with all the way along the line. I get your point on that, but it's from where I sit, the fact is, you know, you have to look at the union case, and unfortunately that's not before this court, but the union has been found they should have investigated and conceivably should have proceeded. They were denied summary judgment on that initial ground of letting Ross Nelson go back to a part-time position. And an employee is entitled to say, I want to file a grievance on this. And that would be then a different question.
What did Krause have to do with whether he filed a grievance or not?
I don't understand her causal
role in any of this.
Well, she's the person who's saying we're going to fire that nigger. Now, whether, you know, we don't have her testimony, but
she could be just someone completely outside of the decisional process who just makes a remark. The question is, what is her causal role in Nelson's termination?
She has the direct power over him. She has racial animus toward him,
and she's her superior to fire him. She doesn't have any power.
She's the person telling the superior why he should be fired.
Did she lie to her superior?
She certainly misrepresented what was going on, yes. She said
to misrepresent.
She told him that this is somebody who was a part-time seasonal driver who was refusing to do what they were supposed to do. She didn't say this is a full-time driver who's filing a grievance. There's nothing in the record to suggest that. What the facts of the matter were is that he was a full-time permanent position who had 40 days, as UPS admitted in its response brief, who she was nonetheless calling a nigger and saying he should go back to this part-time position, and then she's the only person communicating with this supervisor.
Was he permanent?
Yes, he was, Your Honor. And there's...
Well, I thought he was part of this program where they would bring these part-time drivers in for full-time during particular periods of the year.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, he wasn't hired for that. You know, what UPS misconstrues is this idea that if you look at the constructive bargaining agreement or the collective bargaining agreement, what they talk about is this notion of somebody who was hired as a seasonal driver for the summer. People are brought in to take over these part-time positions and to fill in for drivers on vacation. This is a man who had been there for years, had been part-time in one position, had moved up to another position, and moved into a driving position, which was full-time. UPS says in one place that he hadn't satisfied it, and he said, then they say in another, he had satisfied his 40 days. And if you look at the collective bargaining agreement, under the collective bargaining agreement, when you satisfy that 40 days, you're a vested full-time employee. And the other thing, Your Honor, is, I mean, he had an actual route. He wasn't just somebody who was filling in from day to day for one person or another. He was, in fact, a full-time permanent driver. They argued that the reason for letting him go was that they had moved all of these part-time drivers into full-time positions or people off the street into these full-time positions and had sent them back onto the street or back into these part-time positions. But even there, although they say in the response brief here, they use the word all for the people that were in there, if you look at the record and you look at what they've cited factually, they identify 10 people who were in that position who had not vested, who they then moved out of those positions. We have no way of knowing how many other drivers, certainly how many permanent drivers, were nobody was, you know, it's not like there was this global fire, all the drivers. What there was a situation where this man had vested. He had a permanent position.
Well, you're saying the ones that they claim were in the same position he was and were all white weren't in the same position because they hadn't had vested rights?
Well, they weren't all white, Your Honor, but I am saying that the drivers that they identified and claimed are similarly situated were inherently not. They were people who had not vested. They were people who had been hired that summer, and that language is what they use. They say they hired him years ago. These were people that had been hired that summer who had these part-time positions for a short term and then were let go. He wasn't part of that group. He had been with this company for years. And he also had, you know, there is, no matter whether you're coming from the outside or whether you've been there long term, there is this 40-day vesting period. He'd satisfied that. And once you vest, you know, the problem is you're putting in these dues over the course of years. Do you vest or don't you? And when you vest, that's the only time you ever get these benefits and all that. If they can let you go before that, good for them. The union gets to keep its money, and UPS doesn't have to worry about permanent problems with people. But you pass that line, you vest, you're there. And, you know, we can speculate that maybe what they were trying to do was to kick him out with everybody else. And maybe what they were trying to do was terminate him for insubordination. But what this person said was, we're going to fire that nigger today. And that's what she said on the spot at the moment in time that this happened. And Your Honor, I saw cases that dealt with the idea.
The problem is that your brief is almost entirely devoted to these comments by Krause. And you don't explain, at least I didn't get an explanation, of how you think Krause's conduct affected the decision to terminate him.
Your Honor, what I saw in the, you know, we have a very scant record in the court below, but what I saw is she was the decision maker. She was the person sitting in front of him saying, you're going. The idea that she was talking to somebody on the telephone isn't something he was even privy to.
She fired him on her own, was her own decision?
That's what Mr. Nelson saw and witnessed. He was told by her, you go and leave now. And then he heard her say, we're firing that nigger today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Watson?
May it please the court. This case does involve two issues which the district court found as a matter of law in defendant United Parcel Service favor, and as a result, there could be no finding of discrimination. The first issue is whether or not at the time of his termination, Mr. Nelson was a seniority package car driver as opposed to a seasonal package car driver. And the second issue is whether or not the alleged statement attributed to Ms. Krause has any legal consequence. The answer to each question as a matter of law is no. For the first issue, Mr. Nelson, at all times in the summer of 2005, was a seasonal package car driver. And on page 18 of the plaintiff's brief, they make the conclusory statement that Mr. Nelson was a seniority driver and the provisions of the collective bargaining agreement regarding seasonal drivers were irrelevant as to him. And they point out, as Mr. Donner did today, this 40-day requirement. However, what they fail to provide for is Article 40 of the collective bargaining agreement between the United Parcel Service and the Teamsters, which states that employees hired to fill vacancies during the vacation period or hired only for peak season shall not be entitled to seniority. The testimony at the lower court and all evidence points to that language applies to anyone who becomes a seasonal driver during that period.
So this 40-day vesting rule applies only to seniority drivers? So what you're referring to as seniority drivers?
It applies only outside of the seasonal periods. One seasonal period begins at Easter and goes to the Friday after Labor Day. The other is during the holiday peak season, begins at the beginning of October to New Year's. The 40 days applies any time outside of that period. If Mr. Nelson had worked 2 weeks beyond Labor Day, or actually 6 days, to the Monday after the Friday after Labor Day, he would have had 40 days. Part of that would have been outside of the seasonal period. He would have been considered a seniority driver. He did not, and that is not contested in this case. He was a seasonal package car driver at all times. And he admits that in his complaint. They performed the duties of a seasonal package car driver, and he later admitted that he was paid as a seasonal driver.
You're saying, in effect, there's no question of any material fact.
That is correct, Your Honor. There is no question, there is no material fact here whether or not he was a seniority or a seasonal driver. During his deposition, Mr. Nelson indicated that he believed that the language of the collective bargaining agreement, which says, as I quoted earlier, employees hired had this certain meaning. But he also admitted he had no role in bargaining that collective bargaining agreement. He had no role in the union. He had no basis for his belief other than what the collective bargaining agreement said. Tom Hafke, the labor manager for United Parcel Service, who had been involved in many years in interpreting these agreements and in working with the Teamsters on these agreements, put evidence into the record that this is how it's always been done. It's been done this for a number of years. There was no testimony to the contrary. The second issue before this court is a statement attributed to center manager Kirsten Cross. Now, our position has been and was with the lower court that Ms. Cross did not say this. But we're not inviting a fact question here. We will treat it for all purposes as if she did. And the court has already pointed out to the most pertinent fact, Ms. Cross had no causal role. Even if she did say this, there's no causal connection here. Ms. Cross did not make any decisions with regard to Mr. Nelson. Ms. Cross did not terminate Mr. Nelson. That, again, was labor manager Hefke. Ms. Krause met with Mr. Nelson and told him, beginning the next week, you're going to be returning to your part-time position.
Again, is there any disputed issue of material fact with regard to who actually had the responsibility for discharging?
No, Your Honor. At the lower court in the summary judgment section, we put as a question the fact that Mr. Hefke actually made this termination and plaintiff agreed with that. So there's no question that Mr. Hefke terminated him. Now, what they've tried to do only here at the appellate court is make the issue the demotion, where Ms. Krause met with him to inform him that he was going back to his part-time position, which, by the way, happened to all those other seasonal drivers.
Well, it's my understanding that that was also automatic. There wasn't any decisional function to be exercised.
That is exactly the case, Your Honor. There may have been a decision if some drivers had been retained as full-time drivers going forward, and someone would have had to pick which drivers to retain, which drivers to send back to part-time positions. But that didn't happen. There's nowhere in the record here that any driver from that summer seasonal class was retained as a full-time driver. They all automatically went back. Ms. Krause was doing nothing more than informing Mr. Nelson that this was happening.
Well, sir, I didn't quite understand it, and I didn't ask Mr. Donner. Was there a separate counsel that represented the plaintiff below?
Yes, Your Honor. He had counsel that was not appointed, that counsel that he had actually gone out and gotten it for this case. So at most, Ms. Krause's alleged remark can be nothing more than a stray remark by a non-decision maker. There is nowhere in this record other than Mr. Nelson's belief that because Ms. Krause was informing him of a decision, that she must have made it, when in fact there was no decision to be made. Unless there are additional questions, we believe that plaintiff has not shown any support for his discrimination claims, and we request that this court affirm the decision of the district court.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Watson. So, Mr. Donner, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Okay.
Your Honor, I'll be brief, and I thank you for the time. Under the collective bargaining agreement, Article 44, which we cited at pages 6 to 7 of our brief, deals with the specific requirements and how the 40-day provisions work, and I think on its face it demonstrates that he satisfies it. They also testified, or they said in their summary judgment, docket number 42, page 9, Nelson worked as a package car driver for over 40 days in the summer of 2005. That was UPS's admission in the summary judgment pleadings. He qualified. He was a permanent driver. The question, Your Honor, is not whether they could have let him go because he was a temporary driver. And that's what the argument in the court below was all about, was whether they could let him go. I think there's a question of fact as to whether they could let him go. The question is, what were their motives for doing it? Why did they let this man go? Krause is the only person who was there. She was testified nothing because she's not come forward to say anything. Nelson's testimony about what happened in that discussion is completely unrebutted. He talked to her. She said, you're fired. She said, we're going to fire that nigger today. She's the person that let him go. She's the decision maker for purposes of this case.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donner and Mr. Watson. Next case.